WIOX is supported by Home Goods of Margaretville, corner of Main and Bridge Streets in Margaretville, New York. Now carrying spices, flour, jams, mustards, coffee and tea, organic vegetables and fruits, and local eggs, milk, cheese, and baked goods. And of course, cooking basics and tools of the trade for everyone at home. Home Goods of Margaretville. Open Wednesday through Saturday, 11 to 5, 845-586-4177 or hgom.net. WIOX is supported by Kimchi Harvest at East Branch Farms on Route 30 at Briggs Road in Roxbury. Experienced growers of organic vegetables and herbs selling authentic homemade Korean kimchi and banchans. East Branch Farms. Information and ordering for pickup at 607-326-6177 or eastbranchfarms.com. WIOX is supported by NBT Bank with locations in Margaretville, Grand Gorge, Hobart, Middleburg, Schoharie, Cobleskill, Cooperstown, Oneonta, and Windham, all with friendly local teams offering a wide range of products and digital tools designed to be easy to use to meet life's triumphs, changes, and challenges. From the smallest moments to the biggest milestones, with confidence. NBT Bank, member FDIC.
Hi, this is Carol Seitz, host of The Rabbit Hole, Monday mornings at 10 on WIOX Roxbury, live and local in New York's Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM, WIOXradio.org, and MTC Cable Channel 20.
You are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the radio.fm app. This is From the Forest, every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good. A little cold today, though, but I like it.
You like it?
Well, it's a little taste of the end of fall. I like the changing seasons.
Yeah, I don't mind it. You know, especially when the wind stopped. When it's in the 20s, it's a good time to work.
Yeah, that's right. 20s and sunny, 30s and sunny, even teens and sunny. As long as there's no wind, it's fine.
Yeah, you can have the wind. But, yeah, when I get home, Central Ulster County tonight, I'm going to have to fire up them stoves. because I got a cold-blooded individual living with me. She's probably seizing up as we speak. You know? Jesus. We're saying, you know, I got to burn 3/4 of an extra core to keep this person warm.
I know, yeah. We discussed that before we got on the air. It's how much extra wood do you go through for different people in your house, yep, keeping it warmer than you normally would?
Yeah.
Yep. I live alone, so I pretty much do what I need to do. And
Gary said he's a full cord ahead.
Yeah,
he's got his bike.
Probably, yeah. But yeah, anyway, I spend most of my time outdoors. So,
well, 2 cords of me.
You know,
it's a 2-cord swing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeez.
But, you know, like I said, I have my hot tub, and it's just so nice to go in there and when it's this cold. And
yeah.
It doesn't matter really how cold it gets for the most part, that if the sun comes out and it's still, it's just a beautiful day. When it's cloudy, the wind's blowing. I mean, yesterday, when did we have that snow? It was Wednesday, Tuesday. Yesterday in the afternoon, boy, that came and it just, you know, I didn't have my vest.
Yeah.
I was going from the sawmill over to the shop, and I mean, it just, this wind come and just filled my inside of my vest with snow. And it was a little bit chilly, but, you know, I said, this is where we're at again, and spinning around the sun.
And vests are underrated, man. Vests keep you warm, you know?
They do, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I don't, I wear a long-sleeve shirt and a vest, and I wear a T-shirt, and then just a heavy shirt, and a sweatshirt and a vest, and that's what I wear all winter.
Yeah.
But except for hunting. And, you know, I'm out work when I'm working, I'm moving all the while. And yeah, this is the third Wednesday, and this voice that you're wondering who just butted in with these guys is the Gary Mead Gallery, LLC. And, you know, I don't know if you folks know, I dissolved the Fruitful Furnishings company, and now I'm running solo, and you know, we have wood to dry. You want to talk about wood, you want to see wood, 1289 Southside Road, I'll teach you everything I know, which, you know, is a scratch on the in the bucket, but just a drop in the bucket from what knowledge there is, but I might be able to help you out. And you know, I do, you know, quick, I have people wanting to cut biscuits for them all the time.
Biscuits?
And biscuits off the end of a log.
Yeah.
Just for...
Cookies?
Cookies, I guess. Biscuits, cookies.
Biscuits,
so,
cookies.
You know, I say, you know, do you have a chainsaw? And yeah, I got a chainsaw, but it cuts crooked.
Yeah.
And I say, well, you suck at sharpening then. You really get to take a course on sharpening your saw.
Yeah.
I mean, you're bothering me for something that you should just learn yourself. It's not that tough. So I give them a crash course. Yeah, you know, I'll cut the biscuits for them when they come. But I say, don't come without your saw, and I'll show you how to sharpen it. It's common sense mostly. And just so they leave, and, you know, saws are cut crooked and whatever. They use 3 times more gas, and you don't, I mean, when you cut an angle,
yeah,
it takes twice the time, and it's just not, it's, and you get hurt with them. And a good sharp tool you won't get hurt with, because you always know where it's headed and the direction you're putting it. So anyway, we're talking about trees with the word black in them tonight.
Start with black.
Start with black.
Yeah, yep. Like black walnut, for example.
Well, that's the last one we were going to discuss.
Okay, like we'll go black willow.
Black willow, yeah, and there's black cherry, there's black locust,
yeah,
and there's black spruce, and you know, it's there's a lot of information on all of them, but you know, I tried to think of a show this Wednesday that would be something a little bit different than we've ever done, and this is one of them, and you know, we're just touching on each tree just a little bit, and You know, there's black cherry. Did we mention that?
And not yet.
Black birch.
Yeah.
And they all have the name, the first name black for the reason that there's some, for instance, the black birch, there's white birch and yellow birch.
Yeah.
That distinction is the color of the bark. The cherry, which I never knew it as black cherry all the while I was growing up on the farm, we always called them choke cherries.
Well, there is choke cherry.
It is a choke cherry.
No, but I mean there is a choke cherry.
Oh, there is?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's smaller.
Choke cherry. It's
more shrubby-like.
So the black cherry is a different tree, but it still gets choke cherries on it.
Well, it gets cherries, but they're way more sweeter than a choke cherry.
And they have the big pit in them.
They do.
Yep.
They both do, really.
Oh, yeah, but we used to, I don't think I've ever.
The only two cherries that are edible out of the three, there's choke cherry, black cherry, and pin cherry. Mm. And pin cherry, I think, is the sweetest. But you don't really find too many of those anymore because they come up like in a very recently abandoned farm deal. Right.
And then they don't last.
Yeah, and they grow tall, though. They can grow 70 feet tall, that tree. But choke cherry, they only grow like 10 feet. You know?
Yeah, well, we always called them choke cherries. And
Pin cherry also.
Wasn't until
also
I got
fire
into
fire cherry. Same what? Reason.
Yeah, come fire in cherry. After.
They just need full sunlight, that's all.
Yeah. Well, I got into woodworking like 50 years ago, and that's when I started learning the proper things to call trees. And
well, common name, you know, is anything.
Common
name is not, I wouldn't say it was improper that you were calling it that. That's just regional.
Right, yeah.
There's not wrong or right. But the Latin name, that's so people can know exactly what they're taught, like which tree.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to learn that because I have no reason to.
No, they're not as fun.
I got enough crap up there to remember now.
Yeah, I mean, around here we call it striped maple, right? But up north it's moose wood, they call it, because they have moose.
Yeah. And what about striped maple, goosefoot maple?
Goosefoot maple.
Yeah.
Although I never hear people in the Catskills call it that.
No, I never heard of it. Heard someone call it whistlewood once, though.
Whistlewood.
Well, that's, yeah. Well,
it's got a hollow pit so you can make a whistle.
I was in scouting for over 20 years, every spring, you only make these whistles in the spring. That's the only time it'll work. As soon as the thing dries up, it don't whistle anymore. But you cut a branch off, and Lynn Kelly made some up to camp when he spent time with us up there. I never actually made one myself, but you just take, you know, you cut it in the spring, the bark peels right off. He did a little whittling on it, put the bark back on and cut a slit in it and blew in it, and it whistles. Hmm. But, you know, by the end of the weekend, it dried out and didn't whistle anymore. So, but we always call them goosefoot maple because the leaves are shaped like a goosefoot. They're very big pad with fingers on them or toenails like. But the birch, black birch, I mean, you could tell that. That's a very smooth bark, and it's like the white birch and the yellow birch, the bark constantly changing and feathering off, basically, and falling. You know, they change like humans change their skin.
Yeah, it gets like blistery as it gets older.
Yeah.
Almost starts to look like black cherry.
Well, at the base of it, it does, yep.
Yeah.
Those old trees, you got to look up the bole probably 20 feet before you can, I mean, 100, 120-year-old black birch. I mean, it looks just like a cherry from a distance. But you get up to it and look it up in the limbs, you can tell right away that it's not. Either that or stick your thumbnail in the bark and smell it. That's a dead giveaway. It's one of the sweetest woods to debark. When you're debarking a black cherry or a black birch in the spring, it's really quite a beautiful aroma they put in the mill. It's almost like essential oils being expelled into your world. But And a cherry, that's kind of bitter. The bark on that. But I always told my scouts, you want to, we did a lot of tree ID. Excuse me. And I would say, look through the forest, and the darkest tree you see in the woods, more than likely, is going to be a black cherry.
Yeah.
Because that bark is almost like charcoal from a distance. You get up closer and it has a little bit of gray tinges here and there, but it's extremely dark. And at a distance, they stand out really, really well. And the black birches, they're not quite as dark, but they're more, they have like a purple tinge to them.
The what do?
The black birch.
Yeah.
They have, especially where you, if you look where the bark is peeling, right underneath that is actually not black, it's purple. The piece that's coming off might be, then, if you're out and lost in the woods or you want to start a quick fire, birch bark.
Yellow birch.
Well, they all work.
They all work. I think yellow birch is even better than white birch. That stuff is extremely flammable, man.
And
golden papery bark?
It pops.
Yeah.
Almost like when you're burning a pine knot.
Yeah.
I call them fireworks, but these little pockets of whatever's in there just start spreading out. Boom, boom, boom. And make little popping noises, too.
Very aggressive. It's kind of scary when you put it in the woods, though. I don't like it.
There's actually...
Oh, the birch?
Birches, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
there's a fourth kind of birch,
A fourth kind of...
Mountain paper birch.
Paper birch.
Yeah. Mountain paper birch. There's paper birch, but then as you go up and get into the boreal forest, like above 3,500 feet in the Catskills, you'll find one that looks just like a paper birch, but it's like redder. I don't know how to explain it.
I think I've seen them.
But... It looks almost, like a paper birch, but it's
kind of like a river birch, red?
Kind of like a river birch, but yeah.
I would have actually called that a black birch up in the mountain.
People argue whether they're a different species.
Because I know I've seen them.
Yeah.
Because, they're not as black as a black birch. They're reddish.
Yeah.
I know I've seen them. Now that you mention that.
You won't find black birch in high elevations too much in the Catskills. It's more of a... Mid slope or lower.
Yeah.
Yellow birch you could find in the upper, but the mountain paper birch, that's way up there, and so is paper birch. But mountain paper birch is a cool tree. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's black locust. Phenomenal tree.
Yeah, you know what? Let's talk about that next. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Every third Wednesday, we talk to Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead. Tonight's topic is trees that begin with black.
Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio. Everything that I got is just what I've got on. When that sun is high in that Texas sky, I'll be bucking at the county fair. Amarillo by morning, Amarillo, I'll be there. They took my saddle in Houston, broke my leg in Santa Fe, lost my wife and a girlfriend somewhere along the way. I'll be looking for aid when they pull that gate, and I hope that judge ain't blind. Amarillo by morning, Amarillo's on my mind. Amarillo by morning, up from San Antonio.
We do get a lot.
All right, we're back. It's From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. And tonight, like we do every third Wednesday, we talk to Mr. Gary Mead about a different Catskills tree. However, we're talking about trees that begin with black, like black walnut, black locust, black birch, black spruce. And, oh, yeah, that last song was George Strait. I've been getting requests to try to name the people that are singing on this show. It has nothing to do with the forest.
That's all right.
I just like it.
Hey, I got to, before we get back into the trees.
Yeah?
I got to tell you about something I saw this week.
Uh-oh.
Something I've never seen before. Gary, what do you think of this? I saw a deer in a tree.
In a tree?
About 40 feet up. Ryan, I got a picture of it. Ryan saw it.
Was it a big tree?
Yeah, it was 40
feet tall,
sugar
yeah.
maple. It was probably a 70-foot tall sugar maple.
But it must have... Was it dead?
Yeah, I'll give it away. It was...
That's the only place I've ever seen deer in trees.
You got it.
On the ground.
It wasn't a person that put it up there, though.
Tree is upright.
It was a bear.
No, it was an eagle.
An eagle took a... Well, it couldn't have been a huge deer.
It was a hide. It wasn't the whole thing.
Oh,
but
right.
It was carrying it. I didn't see it. I didn't see it drop it, but the landowner did, I guess. It was flying over and caught his attention and right over top of his head dropped it and right above his driveway landed in the tree, and I happened to pull in minutes later, and he said, look at this. So I got a picture of it. He thought it was a fox at the time, so I had to get the binoculars. This is how high up it was. I had to get binoculars out
to see
what animal that was up there. And, it was a deer hide up there.
Amazing. So. I was driving to work after lunch one day, and I was right by the Fresh Town. Actually, this was back when it was the A&P, and out of the corner of my eye, I saw an eagle diving into the stream there. And I kind of pulled over and looked, and he went down and he grabbed a duck, flew back up into the tree, but when he let go with one of his talons to grab the branch, the duck got away, flew and dove right back into the water. Yeah. If I didn't have a, I would have stayed and watched the whole thing, because, I mean, ducks can't stay underwater that long, and, you know, the eagle's just sitting there patiently waiting for his wounded duck to get back out where he could catch him again.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, I was late for something I was doing, and always in a rush, you know, run, but not anymore. I've kind of slowed down these days, and being able to, take my time, you know, do more, educational fun things rather than just, you know, slamming out product out the door and keeping customers happy, and that part of my life is over. I kind of miss it, but I don't, and I'm really getting used to not having so many deadlines and obligations, and I may just live a little longer because of that, which would be nice, you know. But anyway, we're talking about, oh, we forgot black willow. That's that's another one. And I don't know the difference. Black willow is, I think Dick Fairburn used to call them 35 years ago, creek popple.
Yeah.
And, you know, because when he had the sawmill, everything that didn't make grade lumber, he saw it, he had a pallet mill. And we did a friend of mine, Dave Conliff and I, we did a wall in his house, because, you know, let's face it, when we were just starting, everything was expensive, no matter, you know, $100 was a lot of money, and, you know, now $100 won't even get you hardly a night out on the town. But
I got news, Gary, things are still expensive.
They are. Yeah. But, you know, now what used to be $100 is now $1,000.
Right.
But anyway, we did this willow wall because I went to Fairburns. I said, geez, Dick, you know, what's the cheapest wood you got? He said, well, I got this stuff over here. It's 7 cents a board foot. And it was run through a pallet mill. and we got inch and a half by four and three quarter by six. And we brought the stuff, and I don't know how the hell we dried it, but all I remember about working with black willow is it likes to twist. It doesn't like to lay flat. It doesn't like, you know, it doesn't really like to be worked. But, you know, once we put that inside the stile and the rails and made little raised panels out of it,
yeah,
that made them one of the most, we did it all the way up the staircase. And on the right side wall going up, because the left side was open, and it come out beautiful. Yeah. I mean, it really did. We put in, we used a Danish oil on it back then. But I can remember the wood was very light, feathery. I mean, we like to feather out a lot. It's, I think if the grain raised on a little bit, if you, you know, picked at it with your finger, between two fingernails, and pulled it, a long strip would just tear out of it.
It's very brittle.
Sort of like
brittle tree. For some reason, you find, it seems like you find more of it on this side of the mountain, on the East Branch, than on the Ulster side, on the Esopus side. I don't
know.
The
black willow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not very familiar with it until I moved to Margaretville and then saw...
It's all over on the West Branch, too.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if people... if it just for some reason grows naturally here, or people, you know, enhanced it by planting it, I don't know. But there's more of it on this side, it seems.
They get big.
Yeah.
Willows, if a branch, a live branch breaks off and stabs into the ground, a tree will grow.
As far as I know, it's the only native willow.
Right. Because weeping willows aren't native.
No.
And they... I have never cut a weeping willow up. I've had some people call me, and, you know, when I was running the mill, I didn't have time to, you know, go, you know, it's 6 foot diameter, which is no exaggeration. They got, they get 5 to 6 foot in diameter. And I always thought, man, I cut this thing into, you know, table basis, whatever. But I never got to work the weeping willow, but the black willow, I know I have worked that before. And, you know, a common name or basic name is Creek Popple. That's what Dick Fairburn always called it. And then there's Black Locust, which we were talking about just as we went off. That's a, it's one of our most precious trees, really, as far as lumber quality. And I only got introduced to black locust about 7 years ago. Never cut a piece of black locust log in my life, and I got a phone call. A local logger, I got 7,000 feet of it. Do you want it? Of course I want it. But he would always call me every time he had a non-marketable log to sell. And these were land clearing, and, you know, what do you do with black locust? It actually went to Fleischmann's, to the firewood plant. And he said, you know, if you want to buy it, I'll pick it up and run it down your mill. And I got about 7,000 board foot of logs. And, I mean, I've been sawing it up and drying it. It's absolutely beautiful. It doesn't, I thought it would twist and warp and have all kinds of issues, but it doesn't. Mm. It's one of the soundest, easiest to dry woods that you would think with the density of it. But, you know, it's probably about a pound more per square foot than white oak.
It's really dense.
It's heavy. It's like... You know, I have pieces standing at the gallery, and people come, and I'll say, oh, this is black locust, and I'll have a piece of basswood there, I'll have a piece of black locust, and I'll say, just feel the different weights in that. Well, they start out picking up the lighter stuff, and they get down to the end where the locust is, and they go to pick it up, and it slips out of their fingers. You know, it's like, you got to get a better grip than that. But
yep.
Anyway, and these are only boards that are 4 inches wide and, 4 or 5 foot tall, an inch thick. But, I put a Black Locust deck on. I've been doing a lot with Black Locust, but outdoor furniture is, you can't beat it. It'll last 100 years outdoors. And back on the farm, we use Black Locust fence posts, and, they're the only ones we didn't have to change every time we made a fence. We'd just have to take the post maul and pound them in a little tighter. And what loosens them up is frost every year, and spring and winter, and it just keeps gurgitating, pushing stuff up out of the ground. Because, there's a lot of stone in these mountains. Every year we plow a field to plant, and, Dad, to have the same comment every spring. He said, "Where the hell did all these stones come from? We didn't ever plant these." And we would pick tons and tons of stones off a field, and there'd be just as many about the next year.
Yeah.
And it was becoming the frost in the spring, and, over winter and thawing and freezing, they surface to the top.
Yeah, I've noticed that with my when I dig holes for trees in my lawn. Quite often when you put the digging bar down, it'll hit a stone right at the surface.
Yeah.
And once you remove those, then they'll be your normal amount of stones. But, but usually they're right at the surface.
Yeah.
Just like you said, almost like a blanket, sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2 stone for every dirt. Somebody wrote a book like that in the Catskills. And it's true. There's a lot of stone here. But stuff grows so good here.
Yeah, the trees don't care as much. I mean, there's some areas that are really bony, but...
Well, it gives them something to hold on to.
Yeah.
Actually, too, yep. So,
yeah, if I had to think of the boniest areas, I'd think, the escarpment area near Woodstock. That is really...
Yeah, very rocky.
Very rocky.
Is that along a river?
Westkill area, no. That's rocky.
Westkill?
Yeah, Westkill, yeah. Esopus Highlands, not necessarily in the Catskills either. Esopus area is very bony. Where I live can be very bony. The escarpment area, where the mountain's really steep, kind of as you start
New
to go.
New Kingston's pretty bony. I have one section, I have about 35 acres of the old farm up there, and I have a pasture. And there's one section of that is solid rock. I mean, there's moss and trees growing wherever they can in it. Not much grows there because pinksters will grow coming out of them. But, I'm building a house up there, and I thought, geez, if I need stone for anything, I'm going to go in there and excavate some of that. And it's only, it might be a quarter of an acre, but it's just, you can't get a crowbar in the ground anywhere in that quarter acre. It's just solid stone, and you can see the layers sticking up out. So I don't know how big these things are, but they probably go down in the dirt a little bit. And, there's no deer trails going over them because they don't like walking on that stuff, especially rocks that are kind of on an edge sticking out of the ground. And, the frost pushes them out a little bit every year, but... The only thing that grows around them is there's a little grass and, maybe some, but the only high bush that grows there is a pinkster. They seem to grow just about on anything. So,
yeah.
And the thorn apples don't even grow there, which is unusual.
Thorn apple, yeah.
Another tree that I've never harvested and milled. They don't get big enough.
Yeah, I've cut plenty of them.
You don't want to mill one of those, Gary.
No.
I have. I've cut. We used to, on the farm, we cut thousands of them out in the pasture and pile them up and burn them.
Yeah, I bet.
And, boy, it made a lot of, made a big fire. But, and that, actually, where we burnt them, that whole area was much greener.
Yeah, they've been stabbed by them a lot.
What's that?
I've been stabbed by them a lot.
Oh, and that when you get, they go in, you pull them out, the skin that's on the outside stays in there, and that really is painful.
You can get infected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have got infected. I got them in my feet.
Yeah.
I used to run around barefoot on the farm. Hated stepping on those things. thistle wasn't bad. compared to thorn apple.
Yeah.
Thistle will bite a little bit, but, you know, not near as bad as thorn apple.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Tonight, like we do every third Wednesday, we're talking to Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead, about trees that begin with black.
Who draws the crowd and plays so loud? Baby, it's the guitar man. Who's gonna steal the show? You know, baby, it's the guitar man. He can make you love, he can make you cry. He will bring you down and he'll get you high. Something keeps him going miles and miles a day to find another place. The guitar man. Who's on the radio? You go listen to the guitar man. Then he comes to town and you see his face. And you think you might like to take his place. Something keeps him drifting. Searching for the songs to play. Then you listen to the music and you like to sing along. You want to get the meaning out of each and every song. Then you find yourself a message and some words to call your own and take them home. Lights begin to flicker and the sound is getting dim. The voice begins to falter and the crowds are getting thin. But he never seems to notice. He's just got to find another place to play.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight, we're talking about trees that begin with black with Mr. Mead, Mr. Gary Mead. So, Gary.
Well, one thing about trees that begin with the first word black, they all have white sapwood.
They do? And
they do. Black birch
has
a white sapwood. Black cherry has a white sapwood.
Oh, yeah.
Black locust has a white sapwood. Black walnut has a kind of a lighter color, kind of a purplish, maybe.
It's light when you first saw it.
It's definitely different.
It changes. It gets a little darker over time.
Yeah. It seems like a lot of these names are from the bark, maybe.
Yeah.
Right?
But black walnut's from the lumber.
Black walnut is dark.
from the Heartwood.
I don't know, man. You know, that'd be something to find out, because black walnut compared to white walnut is darker bark than white walnut.
That's true.
I mean, that's how I...
It is, yeah.
...kind of decipher it when I see it in the Hudson Valley.
I can tell by the leaves. Well, white walnut looks kind of like a white oak bark to me.
Yeah. That's pretty subtle.
Because, you know, white oak from a distance, you stand back and this tree almost glows in the forest.
Yeah.
You get up, you see the darker shadows and the, you know, the deepness of the bark a little more. But from a distance, they're kind of white. I mean, the wood isn't white, but I always figured that's why they call white oak is because the bark, you know, standing back maybe 100 feet from it, it looks white.
The bark does. Yeah.
The bark does.
It looks white like a sugar maple does.
Yep. Yeah.
Sugar maple's kind of whitish looking.
It is, yeah.
You know, it gets those patches of lichen or whatever. You ever notice that on sugar maple?
Yeah.
I've know of a stand of sugar maple and one sugar bush I helped tap once. And the whole, let's think about this, the whole south side of every tree was pretty much white. It wasn't lichen. It's like a deposit, like a calcium deposit.
I don't know what it is. To me, it kind of looks like lichen, but I'm not really sure, to be honest.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? You think it's deposit?
That's what it resembled to me, like some type of deposit.
I've never even heard anyone talk about it, to be honest with you. But the only reason why I focus in on it now is because of tree ID.
Yeah.
Very difficult to decipher to people, you know?
Yeah.
And basswood's another one that's familiar to a lot of them. You know, once you see enough of them, because I'll be driving along and I'll pass by something and, oh, there's a beautiful basswood. How did you know that? I don't know how I know it. I just looked at it and, you know, we could go back and check.
You could tell by the way it is.
I could tell. Just something about it. If you really pay attention enough, it just pops in your mind. But then I'll get in the mill and I'll be looking at different species of woods that have, you know, maybe problems while they were growing, where they change color. And I get, you know, I'll look at a piece of cherry my first instinct is that's cherry, but it'll have all these black lines and all this weird stuff in it, and almost look like maybe a birch or something. You know, once I start second guessing myself, then I get confused. So,
well, black lines could be wounding, where a tree is compartmentalizing. Those are barrier zones where a tree is trying to stop some kind of invader, whether it's a pathogen or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, mineral. Cherry pulls minerals out. It puts mineral black pockets in some cherry that I get. And it's really pretty. It sell was pallet grade wood. You know, black cherry with black pockets isn't desirable.
Yeah.
Unless you give it to me and I make something and people look, oh, what kind of wood is that? It's regular black cherry and it's beautiful. Barking, you know, diseases. But, God, I lost my train of thought. I was going to say, white.
I know one that's black that we didn't mention tonight.
What?
Black oak.
Black oak.
Damn.
Yeah.
Now that's difficult to tell apart from white or from red oak, really.
From red oak, yeah.
Yeah, it can be.
And rock oak.
Rock oak is a different, is another common name for chestnut oak.
Yep.
Same thing.
Oh, it is.
Same thing.
Because I have some 30, 36 inch, I got 5 of them from Hofer's.
Yeah, now as far as I know, rock oak is sold, now you would know more than I would, that is sold as white oak.
As white oak.
Okay, yes. Yeah, right.
Because I said, geez, last spring I had a bunch of orders for raised beds and said, costs a little more to buy the white oak, but it'll outlast hemlock, by 20 years. So, you're going to buy hemlock 3 times, you're going to buy white oak once. And for the price difference, it's, less work, whatever.
Here, the price is up. A logger was telling me 2 nights ago for rock oak or chestnut oak.
Well, I'm sawing tomorrow. I got 5 huge logs that take me all day with one guy to saw them. But We're going to get some amazing boards out of that. And that's, but most, you know, back to the sapwoods, most trees have a white sapwood. And I always liked the sapwood, the different contrast between where the, and, you know, sapwood that starts with the cambrium layer. Oh, God, I get goosey over that. That's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And there are logs that you can't actually debark. You have to hand peel them. But the cambrium is so beautiful, and there's very little sanding. If you peel the bark off a log, you know, like in the spring and a piece of bark falls off, feel how smooth that is. It's like 600 grit. You know, you just polished it down to 600 grit. It's amazing. And but if you're doing something with a live edge and you want the cambrium layer, it's only a 16th of an inch thick. So
you're talking really, about when you peel it, so when you peel the bark off, it's right. Really smooth.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's
on the log.
Super smooth. Yeah.
Yeah, it's slick.
Yeah. So when I'm doing live edge stuff, I have to hand peel my my logs with bark spuds, and they really work. I have an antique one that I got from Joe Hewitt with a white oak handle, and then I got a one with a hickory handle.
Yeah.
And they're both called Beaver Tail, but they don't look that much similar. Hmm. The old one works actually better than the new one, but you need two to peel bark. You have to have one in there holding it up, and then you just run down the log and keep pushing it over.
But I peeled some hemlock logs 5 years ago now. They look like I peeled them yesterday.
Really?
Yeah, the kids, they rocked down them as a balance beam.
Oh, you got them still in your yard?
They're in the woods. No, they're in the woods.
Oh, right outside your house?
They're far enough back where I can't get to them with my truck to saw them up for sapwood, but they just don't rot.
Yeah.
Once you take the bark off a hemlock, it doesn't really rot.
Yeah.
I guess.
Well, what the bark does in any tree,
yeah.
If you leave the bark on, all these critters get in.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of critters that love cambrium. I mean, that's a good food source for them. And they get in, they make more designs, but, you know, once bugs get in there, the cambrium changes color a little bit.
I think it holds the moisture in, too, or something.
Yeah.
You know, rots them faster.
Makes
but
sense.
I have another point with black walnut there. Back in the, I had a guy a month or so ago tell me, my son just figured out how to, this big long thing, how you make the heartwood of a walnut and the sapwood the same color. And I don't even remember what he went on and on about this and that and how scientific it is and everything. And I said, well, here you go, Becky. I said, well, shit, all you have to do is throw it in the pond for a month and it'll turn the black, it'll bleed out in the, actually the bark has a lot of black in it. Mm-hmm. And the inside of the wood, because that's back in the old days when loggers brought walnut to the mill, they floated them in, they let the black walnut, I had, some sawmill and I was growing up over in Jewett, my grandfather's garage one day, and there was a sawmill below, and he said, the black walnuts, we just float them for a month, and when you saw them, you can't even distinguish the sapwood. It's the same color because it bleeds it right into it. So he got done with this 15-minute story, and I said, I'll just throw it in the pond, wait a month and skip all that. You just told me.
Some time. Gary, do you have something to read? We got about 6 minutes left.
Oh, here we go. Well, there's this, I wrote this the other, when we had that big snowstorm, I wrote this 10:30, 2020 at 6 p.m. It's called Then It Can Snow. You know, all the while I was growing up, all the old timers said, when the swamps are full, then it can snow. So basically, there's a lot of reasons why the swamps fill up and whatever, but this is what I wrote. Then it can snow. Living in this Northeast corridor, heard this many times for many years. Let's see how we got here, season hopping. Winter would end, bringing on spring. The time for change, new beginnings. Plants, flowers, birds, bees, trees rejuvenating. People and animals do the same, new beginnings. Summer would then fall into place, growing season put into motion, seeds with soil, sow food for survival, to keep well fed during long cold winter. Autumn would then take its place, behind now most of the growing season, shelves and root cellar full again. Again taking its place in rotation, most talked about year after year, is winter and what it may bring. The most feared season by far in this northeast corridor. Woolly bears showing their prediction, what will happen this winter season. Late autumn every year, if we listen. Echoing in our mountains here, old timers' voices are very clear. When the swamps are full, then it can snow. Have a good night. Have a beautiful Thanksgiving, folks. And a good holiday season. We'll see you next month. And try to bring you some more peace and joy to the world.
You going hunting, Gary?
Am I going hunting? Yeah.
Saturday's the big day.
What? Saturday's the big day. Yeah, I've been hunting, and, you know, we're hunters in our family. And, you know, my favorite meat is venison. And I have enough to get from year to year. And I use every bit of it. The front legs where all them tendons are, most people chuck those. I split the tendons, scrape it out. Out of one front leg, I can get about 1.5 hamburgers. Just the bottom from the...
Shanks?
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're really... takes a while. But just like tenderloin, it's a real super... it's really tender. But, you know, it takes a while to process. But I got a system now where... well, I cut my finger on a saw years ago, and I got this nail that's like 3 times thicker than the rest of my nails.
Yeah.
And I use it for, like, holding on to things, because, I mean, I use it to open up boxes instead of a utility knife. I mean, it's just one heck of a nail. If I sharp, it really, but I hold that down, I just scrape it with a sharp knife, and that beautiful stuff just comes right out.
Yeah. I don't know. You still going out there, John? Hunting? Go hunting this weekend?
Oh, absolutely.
Open day of gun season?
That's right. I'll be out.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot more licenses that were sold.
Yeah.
A lot more.
Yeah, a lot more people are planting gardens and stuff because of the pandemic, and yeah. I hear licenses are up.
I think Max was telling me the statistics, and I think they were... like 30,000 more rifle licenses sold in New York State this year, and about 15,000 bow stamps.
Hmm.
And, you know, you don't do the courses are all online now.
Yeah, I think that helped. So people didn't have to go to a venue that's always full. Anecdotally, I didn't see more bow hunters this year on the roads. I did not notice any more. In fact, it almost seemed like less. I did not see that many bow hunters on the way to work. Because, you know, I notice those things because, you know, you're like, oh, man, I should be going. It reminds me I should be out. But I didn't feel that way this year. Did you? Did you see any more or less, you thought?
No, I don't think it was any different, no.
Saw more bear hunting. Early bear season, they saw more people hunting.
And turkey season. In the spring, there was tons of people. Yeah, the guy that brought me
a couple logs to my mill, he shot a 400-pound bear with a white breast.
Yeah, white patch.
A white patch, yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful thing.
That's cool.
He showed me a picture. I've never seen one like that.
Yeah.
So the mother bear that is on top of from the forest piece, I think I'm going to give her a white patch.
Yeah.
Just to make it just seems so much almost sexy.
Jesus.
A sexy bear. Well, Hop makes dancing bears. Well, I'm going to make sexy bears.
Yeah.
All right.
This is a spirit animal, isn't it, the bear?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Quite incredible. But anyway, we're going out. We'll see what it brings. And I've been out with my crossbow a couple times, but I haven't seen anything. But we're thinking if up on state land above where we're hunting that maybe a lot of them will get pushed out of the high peaks down into the valley where we
are. Yeah, hey, more hunters helps during gun season.
Back when I was on the farm, it was a national holiday.
Yeah.
I mean, but it opened on Monday. School was closed Monday because of hunting season because they couldn't get the bus drivers.
Yeah.
And then they opened it on Saturday. You know, this was only like maybe 10, 15 years ago, right?
Hmm. Saturday. Well, more than that now, Gary.
Well, probably, but, you know, at my age, what the hell's 15 years?
They didn't cancel school there.
It goes by in a heartbeat.
I know it. Well, that's all the time we have. I'm from the forest, and
we'll go out and visit a black tree.
That's right. And
appreciate them and love them to death.
Take care and have a happy Thanksgiving.
All right. Peace, everybody.
All right. Good night.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the